Hi there again, my name's Todd Fraser and it's my pleasure to bring you another special edition of the Essential Critical Care Podcasts from the 20th Annual ANZIC C2G meeting from the beautiful Noosa Heads in Queensland, Australia. Joining me on this episode is Diane Mackle to talk about the ICU ROCKS trial. Di, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
So for the longest time, medicines believed that oxygen's both been helpful and not harmful, but that's beginning to change a bit, I guess, isn't it? What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. I know when I started in ICU and even before that in the wards, the first thing you did was to turn the oxygen up, and at times you would be giving 100% oxygen. And I think, so even 20 years ago, we knew that 100% oxygen wasn't a very good idea. But over time, people have become a lot more interested in it, and people have been doing observational studies. And I think the time was right, really, to do a study about giving less oxygen. I mean, we're pretty free without oxygen in intensive care.
So there's been some trials that have been looking at harm associated with oxygen, and that's been in a range of different pathologies over time, hasn't it?
Yeah, and so, I mean, one of the recent ones, I suppose, is a team in the US have done a small study in cardiac arrest patients, and that shows that exposure to high oxygen in the first 6 hours can affect adversely the neurological outcome. So, you know, there's things like that. There's also been studies done for example, stroke and...
there were some post-operative studies too, I think, weren't there?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the evidence is quite limited. So in the surgical recommendations, you know, the evidence is actually quite weak, even though the recommendation is to give oxygen after surgery to reduce post-op infections and things. So it's just there's not strong evidence.
And so we've traditionally been trying to maintain normal saturations when we ventilate patients, but in the ICU ROCKS trial we're going to try and reduce the exposure to oxygen.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think although we are trying, you know, probably in the past we have aimed for, I guess, what you'd call normal oxygen saturations, but you know, the observational data show that, especially in the first 24 hours of ICU, the exposure to high levels of oxygen means the patient's actually receiving hyperoxia. And or that we might be aiming for 100%, but their arterial oxygen may be in excess of 100, 200, 300, as you'll see if you go to any ICU. A patient coming back from theatre will have a very high PaO2.
So what is that background information that you've got before going through this trial? You must have an understanding of how common this problem is.
Paul Young did a study looking from the adult patient database, which looked at that first 24 hours of exposure, or he led a team doing that, and it did show that there were excessive levels of oxygen in the patient group.
Right. So the ICU ROCKS trial is going to try to protocolise a prevention of superoxia as part of the strategy. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we're avoiding hyperoxia. Yep. So we're not promoting hypoxia. That would be a bad thing. Yep. But we're trying to avoid hyperoxia.
And so what does the protocol involve? How does the clinician at the bedside prevent that from happening?
Yeah, so the patient, once they're enrolled into ICU ROCKS, is randomised, obviously. There are two arms, conservative care and standard care. So that standard care is based on what we know already from the observational data, you know, the fact we know that we're quite liberal. So for the standard care arm, we say no upper alarm limit of saturations on the monitor, because we know from a point prevalence study that people tend not to have an upper alarm limit. So the other thing we do ask is that clinicians try to refrain from turning the oxygen below 30%, because we know that historically 30% is where most patients are ventilated at the lowest level. In the conservative care arm, the essence of it is to really get that oxygen down to room air as quickly as possible.
Right.
And we have an algorithm for that.
Yeah.
And the other thing, which I think is really important, is that we have an upper alarm limit on the monitor for saturations of 97%. So as soon as it hits 97, the alarm goes and the nurse should think about turning the oxygen down as per the protocol.
Yep, okay. So driving that, you're trying to get the oxygen saturation, or sorry, the FiO2 down as low as possible.
Yeah.
Will there be other interventions used, such as PEEP and recruitment and those types of things, in an attempt to reduce the FiO2?
No, this study is really all about FiO2. One of our concerns initially is that people might start adjusting the PEEP as another way of manipulating the values. So we included PEEP data in the study, and initially we looked at that quite closely in the pilot study, and that was one of our aims, to make sure that the PEEP was not different between the two arms.
Right.
And it wasn't.
Right.
So people hadn't adjusted the PEEP. But yeah, that was certainly one of the risks we were aware of.
Yep.
Yeah.
The target saturations that you're looking for is to keep the saturations below 96%.
Below 97, yeah.
No, below 97,
yeah.
Sorry. So why did you pick that number and not a more conservative number, for example?
Yeah, it's a really good point, actually. I'm not 100% sure of the exact decision-making, but when we released the protocol initially, the Australia and New Zealand guidelines were recommending 92 to 96%.
Right.
And I think also, you know, it's a range people are comfortable with. If you drop it too low, well, you also probably put the patient at more risk of hypoxia, and people would be less comfortable as well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but most people can live with that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The randomisation process, is it going to be by centre, or do you have patients within the same unit randomised to different strategies?
It's all done, I'm not sure if this is what you mean, it's all done electronically by the database with a randomisation schedule, which obviously we don't have, and so it is just random.
Yep, okay. Yeah. All right, whereabouts is the study up to at the moment?
Well, it's been going really well. We did a 100-patient pilot study from 2015 to for a few months to just get 100 patients across 6 sites to test everything out. We restarted the overall study, so it's a 1,000-patient study. We restarted just after our Noosa meeting last year in March, and we've gradually increased the number of sites. And as of this morning, I think it was sitting around 794 patients.
So getting close.
Yeah. So we hope to be finished in May this year with the enrolment, and then our day 180 follow-ups will finish in November.
That's very exciting. So what are the outcome measures that you'll be looking at?
Sure. Our primary outcome is ventilator-free days, alive ventilator-free days. So if somebody dies, they get a score of 0.
Yeah.
And apart from that, it's the amount of time that they're receiving assisted hours of breathing up until day 28. So that's quite a well-validated outcome measure now. Other things we're looking at for secondary outcomes are obviously mortality is important, 90 and 180-day mortality. We're looking at functional outcome and cognitive assessment at day 180, and also a variety of other secondary outcomes, process care measures and that sort of thing.
Yep. Yeah. Is some measure of lung injury included in, or oxidative stress included in the outcome measures in any way, or is there going to be a sub-study that looks at that sort of thing?
Yeah, so we don't have a measure of that in the main study. We approached the team at Otago University in Christchurch about doing some oxidative stress biomarker work, and so we have a sub-study which they're coordinating for us, and so that's just in Wellington and Christchurch ICU, who have the facility to do it, and actually Flinders have just come on board as well, so that's really exciting. They're very keen, and so I think we're up to almost 50 patients in that, and we would like to get 100. Just looking at various biomarkers, which I can't actually name.
They're very long, convoluted chemical names, yes.
And Anitra Carr is leading that, and her presentation the other morning was really good. And I mean, I guess one of the things is it's pretty hard to pinpoint which biomarker to do, so it's reasonably wide ranging.
Di, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for joining me again on this episode of the ANZIC CTG Noosa Meeting Podcast. For this and more episodes, please check out my blog at essentialcriticalcare.com or search for Essential Critical Care on iTunes.